Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Tiernan. I am a co-author on this with one of my colleagues who's here. Rebecca Trout is in the audience. And Dr. Ben Raymer, who's the director of our Office of Health Policy and Legislative Affairs. I'm here to tell you a story. This is not a research report. If it is, God's the PI, or Mother Nature. I'm not sure if he delegated. But this is really a story about how our community sectors came together and how valuable it was to be connected and collaborating in order to make it through a horrible tragedy. We had a natural disaster in 2008 when Hurricane Ike, you can see it taking up the entire Gulf of Mexico. And Galveston, Texas is where I am from and where this was done, is a little island just south of Houston, about 50 miles south. You go over that little bridge, well, it's actually a huge bridge, and you're on Galveston Island. So the picture to the left is Hurricane Ike. The picture to the right is the road that leads to the causeway, and you see water on either side. This was the first picture that was published in the Houston Post the day after the hurricane struck. The crews, the film crews, were able to get this far down on the road on Interstate 45, and they could get no further, as you can see why. When I looked at this picture in the paper the next day, I wasn't in Galveston that day, thank you. I was in Houston, which was scary enough. But when I saw this picture, I'm like, wow, that's not that bad, you know. But you have to take into account that this is 7 miles away from Galveston Island. This is 7 miles north. And the amount of debris that was on the highway is nothing compared to the amount of debris that was on our island. And when I really looked at this picture, I went, oh, where are the feeder roads? What happened to the feeder roads? So what really happened to get in Galveston was the amazing, which one of these deals do I just, was what happened when we had this amazing flood event in a hurricane. I'd lived through a wind hurricane, 150 miles an hour. Wow, that was real scary. But nothing compared to what happened when we were devastated by salt water. So I have no relationship. None of us have any relationships to disclose in this talk. To understand our collaboration, you have to understand University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, or UTMB Health. UTMB Health is an academic healthcare center with 4 schools, medical, nursing, health professions, and a graduate school of biomedical science. And we have multiple hospitals, clinics, primarily in Galveston County and Brazoria County. These are 2 coastal counties. We serve a diverse ethnic population, payer mix, assortment of acute and chronic conditions, including the state of Texas prison population. So we are the prison hospital for the state of Texas, which is the largest prison system in the country, probably in the world. I don't know. It seems like that to me anyway. But you can see our little kind of flat sandbar there. You know, that's elevation. My front door is at 13 feet above sea level. That's like really cool that it's that high. But it's really a very flat surface. So you can imagine what you can't see really in this picture is that there's a seawall built all along the south side of the island that's 13 feet high. And that was to save us. The big storm in 1900, which killed more people than any natural disaster still in the United States, it holds that record. It devastated the island, and the Corps of Engineers came and built this seawall, and that was going to save us. But in a flood event, with a big bay on the other side, water just doesn't pour over one side of an island. It kind of came in the back door, and it just came up like water does. So we had a significant flooding event. I'll repeat this picture because it still freaks me out, but our service area was devastated by this hurricane. 3/4 of the island was under 10 feet, a 10-foot surge of salt water, and I have to emphasize salt water because that's the nastiest stuff you can find, and it just wrecks, it just ruins everything. We had billions of dollars in losses, including devastation to our academic health care center, the health district, all of our safety net partners. Everyone suffered in this. Almost every house have at least 2 feet of water or 5 feet of water or 10 feet of water. So first story, second story, every business, our hospital, the entire trauma center was destroyed, the blood bank, the pharmacy, food services, everything's on the first floor. no longer, but everything was on the first floor. So people tore out their houses, tore out their kitchens. That's my refrigerator on the right. It shows salt water in where the vegetables would be. Well, actually, they were in there. They were preserved. And so they went up 3 levels in the refrigerator. And I was lucky because I only had 2.5 feet of water. The other thing that was really environmentally and emotionally destroying was that we had about 10,000 100-year-old oak trees that were completely destroyed and they, as they sat in salt water. So that just ruined the character of the island for many, many years to come. On the right of the picture where you see the trees is just one example of one of our social service agencies. And you see it's gutted. Everything is ripped out, sheetrock, floors, whatever. Every computer, every database, every filing cabinet, every single thing that our safety net had was gone. And that's just so hard to even imagine, but we'll get to that in a minute. We were, as you didn't see on that, well, let me just move on. We were organized and coordinated and collaborating before this hit. And we recovered and restored with a theme of coming back better. What made it possible for us to really survive was a decade-long intervention. And this is Dr. Raymer, the Vice President for what was Office of Health Community Outreach at the time, or Community Health Programs, made this. The first time he did it, it looked too much like a tornado, so then he changed it to kind of be a little bit scary. But we started, when you look at that little half-cent mark, with a little community organizing to raise the amount of money the county gave to indigent health care by half a cent. That would really help our hospital because we were inundated with indigent folks with uncompensated care. And it was just, so we start working with them, and everybody kind of gets around this because it was going to help all of us if people had better access to health care. That led to a health access grant from HRSA, and that's when I got involved with this wonderful team. We brought some money together, and of course, you can always find partners when you have money. So we get that nice, almost $2 million grant, get people working on all the transportation, everything about access that we could be. So we have great partnerships going. From that spins off another grant in the bottom you see from RWJ and HOG, and so I'm thanking people as we go along here. NIH helped us fund our community-based free clinic, so to speak. We also spun off a three-share program. Vondi, if you know Vondi, she helped us get that one going. And so that led to something. We started some community changes with a Family, Children, and Youth Board. That led to, we kept our coalition moving then through another 2 years of having this group stick together and bring more membership in. So we went back to HRSA and got a mental health a grant. And that was really, really thrilling because that was something everybody could get behind, improving mental health access and stabilizing mental health in our community. Because you can imagine, it's a tourist kind of a community. Everybody can come there and survive. I mean, you just don't say, oh, they're new in town today. I mean, you can't tell. So people could just wander around a lot. We then, that moved on to creating a network of teen health clinics and another Robert Wood Johnson grant. Some other money came in there. And then UTMB, with cost savings from especially the mental health, we demonstrated in 3 years we saved the hospital $10 million by keeping mental health patients stabilized and out of the ER and being admitted. And that led to the reinvestment by our system into an indigent health care fund and creating a community health service network. And this is where we had folks going out and reaching out if they got discharged from the hospital, helping them when they were at home and that sort of thing, a very novel and unique thing. So there's a lot of energy here. This was a huge amount of energy, and we all were excited about our partnerships. But the whole point really was we as a system were helping bring the money in and divvy it out, make it work, kind of like that. These were award-winning. Some of these were from local organizations to the state organizations, some national organizations. So these were really great, and they were catalytic. People were very excited about what we were able to do. Well, disasters wait for no plan. So here's our beautiful mental health outreach program sitting under their tent. And that's pretty much what happened. For months, that's what we did. So with billions of losses, I tried to put a safety net there. That's the only clip art I could find. That was just overwhelmed with water. I mean, they couldn't hold it up anymore. So with the loss of all these things, we just we came together as a group, our university, and said we had two major responses to this. One, we had to get a clinic back up, open in the community, because our whole network was down. 182 elevators gone. If you can imagine access without being able to move around. So we looked at creating, repairing the primary care setting, and the second was to restore social service network and aid people and agencies recovering from the storm. We accomplished that at the St. Vincent's Community Clinic. We put a nurse-managed clinic there. These were guys that worked for weeks cleaning it up. One guy up in the upper right-hand corner is pointing to where the water was, so you could see that the whole place was just underwater. And so that was within about 6 months. Then within a year, oops, oh darn, didn't want that to happen. Yes. Oh, here we go. Thanks. 1 year later. So 1 year later, we're all wandering around and just trying to make things come together. There was a meeting called by early responders, Gulf Coast Interfaith, United Way, and the United Way of the mainland. And that's a real also important piece of this. Came together in one of the only rooms we could still go to. And the whole point of this was talk about post-Hurricane Ike recovery funds, federal disaster funds released by Congress to Texas from the Office of Homeland Security. Texas Health and Human Services accepted the funds. They then came through HGAC, Houston-Galveston Area Council, which was our COG, our Council of Government, and HGAC had to process contracts. They had to publish the RFP, they had to review the award contract, and provide technical assistance. Well, when several of us from UTMB walked into this meeting, the response was, UTMB got $150 million, what are you doing here? You know, and somebody I heard at this meeting yesterday said, trust goes out the window when you compete for money. And there is so much truth to that. And we sort of went, well, let's see. Our goal is to help get organized and apply for the social service block grant. And as the guy from Gulf Coast Interfaith said, HGAC has the money. They have $50 million. I said, I have the RFP in my hand, the request for proposals, so I know what that's going to look like. I have visited with HGAC. We're here to help anybody who wants to do that. And we were back in familiar territory. We're here to help get this money here. But it was a little different. Well, we said this. We have 6 weeks. We have a fantastic network. We have a planner. We have some phenomenal grant writers. We have an out-of-sight editor. We have a stable support system to receive and manage this money. This money couldn't go to these agencies because they didn't have computers. They didn't have anything. So we needed systems that were big enough to manage money to do that. And so that's what we were offering. So let's rebuild our safety net, and you will see this happy, happy picture of everybody going, yay, we left United in our goal to do this. Circled in red over there is my friend Becky, who's in the audience, the grant writer, Pat, who you will never know, and myself. So we now are part of this team. So we gathered 60 agencies together. But the United Way did, and we're on the mainland where we could all fit with electricity and air conditioning, which was real important. We had three workshops that we put together. We had 6 weeks, so we did every Monday. We did a workshop. UTMB developed a template with the instructions on how to do an RFP. So we actually took the leap of saying, we're going to teach you how to fish. We know how to write grants, but here's how this is going to work. You have to write your own grant. Every agency has to write their own grant. So we created a template with instructions because these were smart people. They had just never done this before, and they felt very insecure for every reason. So they had to get their articles of incorporation. They had to get their board members. They had to retype everything. They had to go to Austin and get paperwork and all this sort of thing. They had to get their 501c3 numbers all reinstated. They had to get all this stuff together, and they had 6 weeks to do it. So they get started on that. We then meet together again. We review technical readiness and what's the ask going to be. If you can imagine, let's pretend you're the group, and we're sitting in a room almost like this, and I say, okay, what do you need and how much money will you need to do that? And you go, well, I need this, and I need $1 million. And you're like, oh, because you've never said $1 million ever. And so it's like, whoa. So you all think about that. Think about writing, one day you get a chance to sit down, write up your little proposal and say what your needs are, what you think you could do to help put the safety net back together, and how much money do you have? Knowing that there's $50 million. I mean, it was just like, get out. I mean, this was candy store on steroids. It was so much fun. But it was also scary, because what they realized was they had to say what they could do. And they had to say it in terms, according to these the federal protocol, they were going to have to produce outcomes. They couldn't just say, well, give us the money, we'll put it back together, and it'll be okay, which is sort of what they were used to. They really had to document what they were going to do, and that was a big challenge for us. In the third workshop, and of course we review their progress, et cetera, et cetera, we began to cluster into groups: health, mental health, health and social services, education, physical environment, whatever. We get to the third workshop, and it was really about who was still standing, who got their articles of incorporation, who really pulled this up, and how was that going to work. Well, when we got to this stage, I remember this so well, sitting down and doing this, because HGAC was worried that we were having folks double dip. You know, they were getting a million here, and then they wanted a million there, and was that all illegal? And I created this little scheme, and you'll never be able to read it in this slide, but the point is, I put people under direct health and social service, and that was UTMB. College of the Mainland did educational employment. Catholic Charities did housing. Lutheran Social Service did housing and unmet needs. And then Gulf Coast Center, who's our mental health authority, did mental health. And those are the agencies that lined up underneath those categories. And what you could clearly see in this diagram was that some folks helped here and here and here. So if they're asking for $1 million and $2 million and another million, that was legitimate. But when I showed this to the folks at HGAC and they realized they were going to get 60 applications, they kind of had a little heart attack or stroke. I couldn't really tell, but it was a certain total event. And I said, how about if we create lead agencies? So instead of having 50 applications, you'll have 4. Oh, well, okay, that would be great. Well, we actually said 5, and 4 worked. One just could not make it, bring it together. And so we each group that you see here, for each little box that you see them in, wrote a 12 to 14 page proposal. Their background, their rationale, what they could do, how much, and what their outcomes would be, and how much money they needed, and a budget, a whole budget, not just the bottom line, but what the whole budget was, how many people, la la la, the whole nine yards. So then there was this miracle of grant writing to bring 20 page proposals into one 20 page proposal. And that's what the authority of the lead agency was to consolidate that. So here's where we ended up with the 4 organizations, and you see the needs there. And more to the line was, behind the scenes, we worked to merge all these, get these relationships set. And we had to fall back on our legal department and our Office of Sponsored Research to help manage this money, because it was just a lot of money. And it had to be spent in 12 months. Now, you know, that's like Santa Claus or something. I mean, it was just, you think that's really cool, but it was incredibly hard to do. So we submit a proposal, and then we all slept for a week. Here you see how much money each of those 4 lead agencies were awarded. And for those of you that are mathematical wizards, it adds up to $35 million. So each authority, each group had their own group. They had to organize however they wanted to, and they had to make sure that they met their outcomes. We arranged in the health collaborative, so Becky and I were co-directors for the health and social service collaborative. We arranged for a percentage of that money to go to staffing. God, or Becky and I would both be dead. And so we got a guy who could really manage people, and he did a fabulous job, and a lady that could really manage money, and she kept track of everything. And it was just, that also included monthly meetings. So each leadership group, each lead agency, had the responsibility of getting their group through this. So we had monthly leadership meetings, and those were really designed to maintain focus on the plan, share our progress, keep up with client counts so they realized how valuable and critical that was. So it's up to your imagination to imagine what Ada House for women with drug and alcohol problems, what they would be focusing on, and what the health department would be focusing on. Thank you. And what, you know, so each group, nobody said what to do. They said what they could do, what their capacity was. And that was very, very important. But we knew each other well enough, and we knew our organizations well enough, that we knew we weren't overlapping. We had a couple of weeks to sort that out. And if you were counting, if I'm counting her, and you're counting her, as that counting the same thing three times. Well, if I'm doing this and she's doing that and he's doing something else, that's okay. Because she needs far more than our three. She needs like 12 things to happen to make her life better. So we really didn't have too much trouble with anybody walking away with pocketfuls of money. I mean, it all went out to folks. And we were able to keep track of that. So we kept up with our cohorts, we kept up with our colleagues, we kept up with our coalitions, and it worked out really well. As the timeline was extended, they started 6 weeks late, almost 2 months late, which is everybody's experience, my experience on every grant I've ever gotten. And so, but they wanted it all spent in the same amount of time. Well, took a congressional act to carry it on, which was great. So we ended up with 18 months to do that. So we had to do contracts. We had, those things all slow things down. But it was okay. It was also a reimbursement. It wasn't a grant where you get all this millions in the front and then you spend it. If you spent it, then you got reimbursed. And Becky did a tremendous job arranging for our local foundations to front money. So, some people were just cash poor. They were gone. Their money was gone. And they needed some money to boost them to get going and get back up again. So, right before it was over, right before we had to turn our stuff in, I found out that the HRSA was going to own all the data. And they were going to be, whatever came out of that, whatever report came out of that. So we organized a community presentation to spotlight what we had just done, invited the senators and the legislators and the community leaders and all that sort of thing, and did this to spotlight our successes. And so this is the title slide from that. Hurricane Ike Recovery Social Service Block Grant Collaborative Return on Investment. So this was presented a couple weeks before the end. And this was by design, so we could just, it's not the final data, but it was the data we could own. And it gave everybody a chance to stand up in the public eye and say, look what I did, and they felt really good about it, because we knew we had really accomplished a lot. So I just have a few slides to kind of show you how that works. The purpose of that meeting was to provide feedback to our community stakeholders, and we had some objectives that you could see there. So here we see one of the ROIs that we talked about. This was related employment. So social service block grant related employment. You see by the lead agency how many people were employed and funded under this. So that's 266 people were reinstated into our safety net to make this happen. And you see what the payroll was. So that was a fairly significant influx of finance, but very targeted finance into our community. The service count, as I mentioned before, everything had to be counted. So each agency was responsible for that. And you see Catholic Charities had a $10 million contract. They fell short, but they were the only group to fall short of meeting their count. And they had this unbelievable task as it was. Gulf Coast Center, so you see the service count over there. They exceeded theirs. Lutheran Service exceeded theirs, and UTMB Health knocked it out of the park. We were to have met 108,000, and we were at 425. I mean, there was just so much more need than we even anticipated. And once people got into this whole thing and they knew what they were doing, they figured out how to save money and how to make money stretch and how to make it all work, and we had a huge impact. So just to finish up, let me just show you. You can probably read some of the names on here, but this is our mental health collaborative. You can imagine what their focuses will all be on the segment of the population that they served, and in some cases there was overlap. But the Boat People SOS were an organization of people that helped the Vietnamese that had settled into our region as fishermen. That's what they've done for centuries, and so that's what they came to do. I never knew the Boat People, but they were a wonderful organization. Hospice, it just went on and on. So folks came and added on to our collaboration. And so mental health, as you see here, had almost spent all their money as of almost at the end of our grant, and they had met their service count, and in this case it was youth, adults. The mental health collaboration was headed up by the Mental Health Authority, Gulf Coast Center, but you see many other groups worked under that. Gulf Coast Center was just one of many, and you'll again recognize some names maybe you saw on the previous slide. They were also able to, I didn't mean to go over that too fast. They were also able to exceed their count. The return on investment for all of our service counts, to conclude, was far exceeded what we had promised that we would do. I don't know why this is doing this. These just seem to be repeating. I knew that they worked, but I didn't realize that I was having this problem with them if it came in more than once. But the bottom line is, we delivered. We delivered to our community. We delivered to our So housing and unkept needs. I'm very sorry about this. Please forgive me. Thank you. No, I'm not going to do that.